and welcome to Talkin' Tales, where we share stories about our animal companions, their unique personalities, their zany antics, and the heartbreak of saying goodbye. I'm your host, Paul Barnett. Today we have a very special guest, Maddie Giuliano, who is the author of My Name is Muskie, A Ferret's Story, and My Name is Muskie, Stubby's Story. Maddie, welcome and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so very much for having me, Paul. It's a pleasure. It's a privilege and a pleasure.
Great to have you. So you've been involved in animal lives for quite some time. Can you give us a little overview of your background, please?
Certainly. In 2005, the New Jersey State, I was at a pet fair, and the New Jersey State SPCA was there, and it turns out that they were hiring animal cruelty officers at the time. I had never imagined that that would be a direction that I would take. My degree, I'm a Rutgers University graduate, and my degree was in industrial labor relations. So I had a really good background and understanding of the National Labor Relations Act, the Fair Labor Standards Act, and so on and so forth. And the state SPCA thought that I would be a very good candidate in order to be able to understand and interpret Title IV, which are the animal cruelty statutes here in New Jersey.
Okay.
So it turns out that, I was brought on. I went through their academy, and 6 months later, I became an animal cruelty agent for the state of New Jersey. You know, I then was promoted and became an investigator. A few years later, I was able to do a lateral transfer to the Monmouth County SPCA, where I was promoted to the rank of sergeant. And for over 10 years, I served as an animal cruelty sergeant in Monmouth County. I completed over 2,000 animal cruelty cases, give or take 2,000, during my career. And prior to retiring, I decided to pursue more of a spiritual path. I had gotten my interfaith ordination, and I became the chaplain of the Monmouth County SPCA. And that's the position and title that I still hold today.
Okay. Wow. So over 2,000 cases. I mean, that's got to be a tough job. I would imagine, you know, an emotional drain. Not just, you know, having to deal with the various personalities and the animals, but just seeing those situations and having to deal with them. I personally can't imagine, you know, living that life. What was that like? Without getting into specific cases, I can imagine, you know, again, just being difficult.
It was heartbreaking. You know, that's really the only way to describe it, because, you know, I finally understood what the saying actually meant of ignorance is bliss. And you don't know about it, and I don't know about it, and she doesn't know about it, and he doesn't know about it. But when it becomes part of your everyday life, now you see, unfortunately, the horrors and the miseries that so many people put animals through. And these are animals that they, you know, bring into their homes willingly a lot of times and profess to love. And that's what makes it so disheartening. All of those years that I was working, I mean, and I have stories that will really make the hair on the back of your neck stand up. But, you know, while I was working, Paul, I didn't have anybody to turn to. I didn't have anybody to speak to about the miserable things that I experienced and the miserable things that I saw. And so obviously when you work in animal welfare, traditionally you tend to have a, regardless of your faith, your background, religiously, you tend to have a relationship of one kind or another with Saint Francis of Assisi, who's the patron saint of animals.
Mm-hmm.
And so I continued to turn to Saint Francis for help and for guidance and for support. And then what was even the biggest kick in the ass is when my dog, Remy, ended up with cancer.
Oh, my.
You know, my dog ended up with lymphoma, and I'm the one who is out there looking to save and protect animals. I'm the one, you know, Remy always went to his veterinary appointments. Remy always got his medication. Everything I did, ate the best food. Everything was absolutely 110% on par. And I'm the one who ends up now in this situation.
Right.
So that's what continued to solidify my relationship with St. Francis, because I turned to him for continued help and guidance during that terrible time. I decided to have a Conca canine cancer benefit for the University of Penn Vet School of Veterinary Medicine. There was a veterinarian there, Dr. Nicola Mason, and she's still there. And Dr. Mason has been working for years now on a vaccine for dogs with lymphoma. And so I did a fundraiser for her because she, quite honestly, was more supportive than his veterinary team, as far as I'm concerned, and offered more help and guidance than they did. So I said, this is the least that I could do. I ran a benefit for her. I ran two of them in total, and I raised about $15,000.
Oh my!
That went to her research, and there it is now. Now after that, I said, you know what? I'm going to get my interfaith ordination, and I got my ordination from the Emerson Theological Institute, and I transitioned from being an animal cruelty sergeant to becoming the chaplain. And I'm not just the chaplain for the law enforcement division. I'm the chaplain for the entire agency, the patrons, the staff, the volunteers, the executive staff. Because even though the Monmouth County SPCA is by far one of the best animal shelters in the country, we have a live release rate last year of 97.5%. We still have those things, those cases, those situations where an animal doesn't necessarily make it out of the shelter.
Right,
and
right.
And so I'm there in order to lend them all the spiritual support that I can, as well as the patrons who end up in the same situation that I was with Remy so long ago, and giving them the spiritual support that they need during their times of emotional crisis, having to say goodbye to their best friend.
Yeah. So I want to back up for a second, because you mentioned Remy and lymphoma, and you may not know this, but you and I talked for the first time just in the last 2 weeks,
right.
Although I'd been following Mesky's story for a while. One of my previous podcast episodes was actually on one of my ferrets named Kyra. And she was diagnosed with lymphoma in January 2020. And it was a tough case. You know, we did all the traditional treatments with the prednisone and chemotherapy, and nothing was working, and her condition was worsening. And we got to the point where, her doctor was rightfully having a conversation with me about quality of life. And we knew that it wasn't going to be much longer before we would have to say goodbye to her, because the lymphoma was taking over her body. She had large tumors, multiple large tumors. And although at the time she was still happy and playful and eating and whatnot, but we could tell it was, the lymphoma was winning. And we did sort of a Hail Mary, where there, without getting into a long story, another one of my ferrets, Ace, had bone cancer, and we had tried an experimental treatment on him that it worked to slow down the cancer a little bit. But I said, hey, could we use this for lymphoma? And it was an immunotherapy treatment.
That's what Dr. Mason is working on, is immunotherapy. Yes.
Yeah, that's, when I heard that, I thought maybe there's some crossover. Maybe we sort of indirectly crossed paths before.
Sure.
Where, we, again, a bit of a Hail Mary, we extracted one of Kyra's tumors, and we sent it off to have a vaccine made from the tumor. And she got three injections, one each week for 3 weeks. And it took about 6 weeks, but within those 6 weeks, all of her tumors basically disintegrated. And there was no sign of lymphoma. And she lived happily for another 2 years until heart disease took her. But, here, when I thought I was going to lose her at just about 5 years old, she ended up staying with me till about 7.5. And it was amazing, because when I gave the doctor updates, on Kara's condition, she said, well, she was very guarded. Like, let me examine her. When I said, hey, I think the tumors are disappearing. And by the time we got her in for a checkup, the tumors were gone. And the doctor was amazed, and I was so incredibly thankful. So, you know, those may be the same people on the back end working on that, but I'm certainly very grateful for what you've done there in trying to support that effort. Because, you know, when we tried this for ACE, you know, my question was, has this been done before for a fair? And they said, no, this has primarily been done for dogs, some cats, and they had done one skunk, but they had never done a ferret. And so my ferret Ace was the very first ferret to receive that treatment. And while it didn't save him, it slowed his cancer down, but it saved Kyra. And so I'm very grateful for that.
Well, that's a wonderful story. I can't wait. I will be certain to share that with Dr. Mason the next time that I speak with her. I still speak with her, you know, not that often, but often enough. And I will be certain to let her know that it's possible that her vaccine research, her immunotherapy vaccine research, may have saved a beloved ferret named Kyra. I'm certain that will put a smile on her face and make her very happy.
Please, please do share that. Again, I'm very, very grateful for that. And I've been sharing Kyra's story every chance that I get. I see some posts on Facebook where people say, "Hey, my ferret was just diagnosed with lymphoma," and I always have to say, like, you know, I can't make any promises, but this is what we did for Kyra, and this worked. So please talk to your vet. You know, here's a company name. Please talk to your vet about immunotherapy, and if you can, give it a try.
I believe she was working with Aratana Therapeutics in particular at that time. So
okay.
If that's the company name, that may be the exact same research study that I've supported so much.
Yeah. So again, thank you for your efforts there in supporting them, because while it may have been focused on dogs, and certainly, I am an animal lover myself, so I have several dogs. I'm grateful for, anything that'll help them. Historically, ferret research has been much more limited, and there's sort of a trickle-down effect where sometimes some of these treatments that are developed for dogs and cats can be applied to ferrets, but ferrets are not usually the focus of any studies like that. So anything that comes along that can help them, I'm always grateful for, because I've had several, challenges over the years with ferrets, and Kyra was one. But Kyra was one where we actually won, and that sounds like due in part to your efforts there. So
it's nice to hear. It's nice to hear finally a good story when it comes to cancer. You know, usually we always hear these terrible stories where it never seems to work out, and I truly believe at this point that some type of immunotherapy is definitely the future when it comes to cancer treatment for both animals and humans. Chemotherapy is the most antiquated of medicines that we could possibly be doing. And so we have room to grow, and let's hope we continue to grow in a positive direction.
Definitely. Yes. And chemotherapy is hard on the body. I've had two other ferrets that have received chemotherapy agents, and it takes their toll.
It takes its toll. Absolutely.
So, yeah, certainly alternative treatments are desired, and I'm glad to see that some of those are coming around. So
they are the wave of the future, Paul. The wave of the future.
Definitely. So you're an animal cruelty officer. You're a chaplain. It sounds like you do a lot of great work with animals. And one day you meet this ferret. Tell me, if you would please, how you met Muskie.
Sure. So I remember it, Paul, like it was yesterday. It was August 19th, 2018. It was the annual Clear the Shelter event that takes place at shelters all over the country. And I was at the Monmouth County SPCA giving new pet blessings to animals that were being adopted that day. A young lady had adopted two ferrets, so that had brought me into the small animal room.
Okay.
And there was Muskie. Muskie was all by herself. And, Paul, I never wanted a ferret. I wasn't into ferrets. I didn't dislike them. They just weren't an animal that was on my radar.
Sure,
if that
sure.
makes any sense.
Yeah, totally.
I played with Muskie for 10 minutes, and I absolutely positively fell in love. I asked the adoption counselors, "What's the story with this ferret?" Oh, Muskie was a stray ferret, brought in. She is still on her 7-day hold. The 7-day hold expires tomorrow. And I took out my business card and I got the adoption stamp and I stamped it, stamped the card adopted. I put it right on the cage. And I said, "Well, unless somebody comes running in by 3 o'clock tomorrow, screaming, 'Bubbles, I've missed you,' Muskie is coming home with me. This is it. This ferret is mine." Now, keep in mind, Paul, I had never had a ferret before. So I didn't know anything about them. So in the 24 hours that I was waiting for me for Muskie's stray hold to be up, I spent the remaining day and night doing all the research I possibly could. I mean, I didn't even have a cage. I ordered the Ferret Nation cage. I found out what's the best food to use, what to do with this, what to do with that, as you know, as much as I could. And I brought Muskie home. And I remember when I brought her home, Paul, and I let her out, and she had her own bedroom. From thankfully, I had the room here in the house to give Muskie her own bedroom. When I let her out, when I got home, she started weasel war dancing all over the place. And oh my God, this ferret's nuts. You know, because I never saw that before. What is this here? She's crazy. But of course, obviously, I learned real fast what it was. And my relationship with Muskie, I didn't even know, obviously, I didn't know how smart they were, how loyal they were, how responsive they were. My relationship with Muskie grew so much, she became my very, very best friend in the world. And this is what led me down the path now to write the children's story. My name is Muskie, a ferret story, which has done much better than I had ever anticipated it would do. It sold 2,500 copies. It's on every continent, with the exception of Antarctica. Everybody loved Muskie's story. It was a true story about a ferret who was abandoned, picked up by animal control as a stray, taken to the shelter, and adopted into a new loving home. So one night I was inspired to sit down at the computer and write Muskie's story. And I did it in about 2.5 hours.
Wow.
I mean, it's a children's book, Paul. It's not
Sure.
War and Peace, you know
Sure.
what I mean? So it's, you know, it was relatively, it wasn't as intense as writing a novel. But I wrote it, and I remember it was 827 words. And I say to myself, you know, now keep in mind, just like not too long ago, I didn't know anything at all about ferrets. I didn't know anything at all about publishing a children's book. You know, well, what do I do with this? I wrote this story. What happens now? You know? So I sent it out to publishing house after publishing house, and I received rejection letter after rejection letter. So now let me just back up a minute and tell you all about the wonderful world of publishing.
Okay.
It is the absolute worst business in the world.
Oh.
I do not recommend it to anyone. You have a story, that's wonderful, but getting it published, is like climbing Mount Everest. Okay, it's the same type of the same level of difficulty.
Well, I'm sure it would be a lot easier if you'd already sold 25 million books,
Well, of
then they're
course,
interested,
well, you know, and that's it.
right?
I'm not Stephen King. You know what I mean? I'm not Robert Ludlum. You know, I'm a guy who, you know, works as the chaplain, retired animal cruelty officer who works as the chaplain for the Monmouth County SPCA. Who's really interested in reading my book? You know, so what I ended up doing, and this is after, now keep in mind, I'm now researching this every night. Every night, what to do with this children's book? I decided I was going to start my own publishing company. That's it. I'm not just going to self-publish it under Matty Giuliano. I started my own company called Humane Press.
Okay.
And I hired my own editor because 827 words is a lot for a children's book. And I would always look at what I had written and edit it and edit it and edit it. And then you hire an editor. So I hired an editor. I hired my own illustrator, Morgan Spicer, who is the most brilliant illustrator. I'm so fortunate having her as my illustrator. She is just incredibly incredible. And then I hired my own book manufacturer. All right, here you go. Here's my book. Here's my story. Let's print. Let's make a book. And they made me the most beautiful children's book I ever could have asked for. And I was involved in every aspect of it. Unlike when you turn your story over to an actual publishing company that's established, like HarperCollins or Scholastic or something like that. I was involved in every aspect of the process. I picked the quality of the cover. I picked the quality of the binding. I picked the thickness of the pages. I picked the color clarity on the pages. Everything. Everything had to be perfect. Because my name is on this.
Right.
You
And
know, I refuse to I refuse to create garbage. You know what I mean, Paul?
well, yeah. If
And then on top of it, not only do you create it, now I'm asking you to buy it. Paul, I got real crap for you. Would you like to buy some? You know?
Well, yeah, and
That doesn't work.
if you hand it off to an established publisher, they may tweak it to the point where it becomes unrecognizable.
Well, that's another thing that you always have got to be worried about. They could have said, our demographic shows that a book about a ferret, well, this is a nice story. A book about a ferret is not going to go well. We would like to make Muskie a rabbit. And don't think that that doesn't happen.
I'm sure it does, but yeah, and there are some people who might go with that and say, okay, I'm more interested in making the book, but it sounds like you're more interested in getting Muskie's story out there and telling the real story.
Correct. Correct. And so that's what I ended up doing. I went and I did it all on my own. Which is a lot of times, which is nice when you don't necessarily have partners that you have to worry about. The written out, well, the only partner that I did have is I had my wife. Okay.
All right.
So I looked over the numbers. How much is this going to cost me? And the first book was going to cost me to do Muskie's story. $13,500.
That's
And
no small
that's
amount.
that's not just absolutely. That's the cost of the editor. That's the cost of the illustrator. That's the cost of physically manufacturing the book. And so I took my wife out to a very nice dinner. I sat her down with a very nice bottle of wine, made sure she had at least two glasses in her before I told her how Muskie's book is going to cost about $9,500 to do. Rule of thumb, Paul, whenever you have to go to your wife for an expense that's a nickel over $10,000, lie about the amount. Lie about the amount. That's it. I'm man enough to say, Paul, I lied about the amount by about three grand. 95, 10, 5, that, no, by about 4,000. And I said to my wife, I said, listen, one of two things is going to happen here. This is either going to be a huge success, or we are going to have thousands of 9x9 coasters laying around the house.
Oh my.
It's going to be one or the other. You know what I mean? So, put your drink on here. They're not moving, you know? And I was very, very fortunate and so very, very grateful to everyone who's purchased a copy. It's been a huge success. And I'll tell you what's nice too is that it's not just been a success in the ferret community. It's been a success outside of the ferret world as well. You know, in a lot of ways, Paul, I unintentionally, obviously, I hit a very niche market. You know, there are plenty of cat books. There are a ton of dog books. We've all seen bunny books. There aren't any ferret books.
Right.
None. None of you know, none of that have really moved in the children's book category. So since there haven't weren't any of those books, people who were ferret lovers were clamoring for this story. They couldn't wait to get their hands on it. Finally, a story about a ferret. So that made it that was very rewarding as well. And obviously, you know, there's a lot to this besides just creating the book. Now the question became, well, you know, I'm going to have thousands of these. How do I sell it? You know what I mean? How do I get this book in front of you and make you want to buy it?
Right.
So and I'd never had any social media accounts, Paul, because, you know, as an animal cruelty officer, the last thing that I wanted was to go after somebody and then have them be able to just find me on social media, you know?
Yeah.
So I never had one. And you know what I mean? I never had a I never had anything like this. So I then ended up having to create a social media platform and a profile, not just for me, but now for Muskie. So I started the Facebook page, My Name is Muskie, and started sharing whatever I would write every day on as you know for Muskie. I ended up sharing it on all the different ferret Facebook groups that were out there, and slowly it became a worldwide phenomenon.
That's excellent. I completely agree with you that there's not enough ferret material out there, books, et cetera, and really not enough positive ferret stories. As you mentioned, there's lots of stories about dogs and cats, and I love dogs and cats.
As do I.
But when it comes to ferrets, there's not only not a lot of good stories, but there's also a lot of misinformation. Oh, they're mean, they bite, they stink. Oh gosh. You name it. They kind of get a bad rap. And what I've found is, once somebody meets a ferret, and they sort of get through or get past all the misinformation, I think sort of as you discovered, they're wonderful, they're amazing little creatures. I can't imagine my life without them. I've had at least two ferrets since 2001, and they've forever changed my life.
Sure.
For as long as I possibly
Sure.
can, I will continue to have ferrets, and I will continue to champion them and recommend them to folks who are willing to put in the time and effort because they do. They are social creatures. You can't you don't keep them in a cage all day and just fill their food and water bowls when you have time. Like they need to interact with people, with other ferrets. Most ferrets like to interact with other ferrets, and so they are an investment in terms of time, but it is totally worth it.
Well, anything worth having, you have to put time into it. You just can't let it try to grow on its own. It grows with you. And just like I said, I looked forward every night to going into Muskie's room and spending time with her. You know, at first, Paul, too. So now, not knowing much about them, you know, Muskie was kept in her cage during the day when I was at work, and then I would come home and take my shower, have dinner, and then it was ferret time, and I would let Muskie out of the cage. And, you know, after a while, I said, you know, why am I keeping her in this cage? Even during the day when I'm not home, she should be able to walk around. Like, first ferret didn't know, you know? She has her own bedroom. What's the difference? So then I had bought these divider things, you know, these barriers, and I would, this way she only had half the room. And I would,
Or so you
I would
thought.
come home. I would come home and I would find Muskie in the closet. Or Muskie, how did you get out? And so then I bought a camera and I put the camera in the room, and Muskie would figure out a way every day to climb over the barricade and go wherever she wanted to go. So then I ended up taking that down. I said, boy, this was a waste of $60. And then I let Muskie have her own room. But it took me a while to understand that yes, they can free roam within an enclosed space, and that they should have this ability to move around and about. They really are. They are absolutely wonderful, wonderful animals. I can't imagine now not having a ferret in my life.
Your story of Muskie figuring out a way to escape the barrier just reminds me of my first ferret. Her name was Buffy, and I told her story on my first podcast episode. The short version of it is that she was my escape artist. She learned how to climb over any gate, and that didn't it didn't matter you know, if I put the gate at an angle. It didn't matter what I did. Even you know, I put a fence around her cage and then put a roof on top of the cage, and she watched me, and she figured out how to disconnect the roof and then use the cage to jump over the fence. So
yeah,
you can't stop them. I sort of think, you know, when we put up those barriers, you know, they just kind of watch in their mind, they're thinking challenge accepted.
it was great because it really was when I reflect back upon it, it was a ferret intelligence test.
Yes.
You know, it's a ferret intelligence test.
Yes.
Had she not been able to get out of it, I would have realized, you know, all right, so she's not that smart. Yeah.
Well, I have to wonder, you know, for myself with, you know, say Buffy, like maybe it was a human intelligence test where she was testing me to see how long it would take me to realize that she can't be contained.
Yeah. I know. Absolutely.
So, absolutely. So definitely later on, we want to have you share some information on how people can get in touch and get a hold of the book. Sure. But I want to talk a little bit more about Muskie. Can you tell us what was Muskie's typical day like? What were favorite things? What were some of the unique aspects of her personality?
You know, Muskie was never one to cuddle. But whenever she would decide that it was time for bed, she loved the sleep sack. She didn't like beds. She loved the sleep sack. She liked having a roof over her head. And okay. I would lay there with her and I would pet her and she would fall asleep in my hand, nuzzle her head right into my hand. And I reflect back on those days and I say, oh God, how wonderful they were. When Muskie used to wanna spend time with me like that. And then when I would get home and it was ferret time, we would play. It was ferret playtime. And I'll reflect back on the past few years instead of the earlier years, when I became more confident in Muskie's abilities, I became more confident in how the dogs in my house would interact with her. I would let Muskie out of her room and Muskie would run around the living room and then we would go downstairs to the ferret playroom and we would watch TV together. I would throw her toys. She would gather them and stash them. She loved to have pillow fights. That was one of her favorite things.
Oh,
you know, where I would hit her with the pillow. Oh yeah. I would tap her with the pillow and she would jump at the pillow and, you know, try to wrestle the pillow and, you know, boof on the head and she would come after the pillow. And it was just great memories. Stubby doesn't like to pillow fight. He likes to blanket fight. So I do the same exact thing. Instead of with a fluffy pillow, I do it with a blanket. And he jumps on the blankie and tries to pull the blanket away and lays on it. And, you know, and it's so much fun. One of her favorite toys was the snake on a stick. Uh-huh. And, you know, she would jump on that snake and bite it and wrestle it around. And, you know, and I would yell, go ahead, Muskie, go ahead, be the mongoose, go ahead. Yeah, ar. You know, and then she would pull it away from me and then hide it somewhere, you know, carry it off to her victory tunnel.
Yes, the all-important stash.
The all-important stash, right. You know, and so that's the thing that made it so much fun. And, you know, poor Muskie, I look back on some of the older pictures of Muskie who changed physically over the course of many years, changed dramatically. And I remember how beautiful she was. Such beautiful, fluffy, white fur. And I would call her, Paul, the Elizabeth Taylor of ferrets.
Oh,
that's what she was to me. The Elizabeth Taylor of ferrets, just so like Cleopatra, so beautiful, you know?
That's wonderful.
I will never forget all that Muskie did for me. You know, people have spoken about all that I did for Muskie. Look, what I did for Muskie was I gave her a wonderful home with a warm hearth, good food, and time, love, and attention, which is what every animal who's a pet deserves.
Right.
I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything particular or out of the ordinary. But what Muskie did for me, Muskie has introduced me to thousands of people all over the world who love their ferret just like I love Muskie. Muskie became their leader.
One thing that I have realized is while they, obviously they do age, much more rapidly than humans, and in my experience, say they live about 7 years. They start to develop medical conditions around 5.
Yes.
But I recently, in fact, in an upcoming episode, I'll be talking about my ferrets, Milo. I've had 3 different Milos, and my first Milo, Sable Milo, made it to 9 years old. He was my first ferret to ever make it that to that age. And I'd had him since he was about a year and a half. And of course, he was very active then, very playful, and then he slowed down over the years. And while I saw his body change and age, and he lost some fur and lost some weight and whatnot, there's sort of that look in his eyes. You look in his eyes, and he just kind of trusts me. And that never changed. His personality never changed, even though his body did. And it was a it's a very special gift when you see and you experience that kind of trust from them, when they just kind of say, "Hey, you're my human, and I trust you to play with me, to take care of me." And that never changes.
No, it never does. They really look up, they really look on you, look at you forever, that you're my mom, you're my dad. You complete my world. And I don't know where, Muskie gave me so much more than I gave her because of everyone that she introduced me to throughout the ferret world. I'm able to share wonderful stories every day on social media about the I almost wanted to call it As the Woozle World Turns, because I would create these wonderful stories for Muskie and Stubby, and people absolutely fell in love with it. And creating these stories every day on Facebook and Instagram, Paul, it's exhausting. I'm not gonna lie to you. The hardest part of my day has really become, what am I going to write tomorrow? What am I going to put on Facebook that's going to make people laugh and smile? And there are many times that I said, I just don't have the energy for this anymore. I'm going to stop, or I'm going to slow down. I'm going to do this instead of every day. I'm going to do it every other day, or whatever the case may be. And then I would get messages from people saying basically how unhappy they were with so many different things in their life, and that reading the Facebook page, My Name is Muskie, just brightened their world. And it was that little bit of relief from all the heavy water that bogged them down on a daily basis. And when you read those things, when you hear those things from people, how do I stop? How do I leave people in the lurch? And not leave them with the relief that they get from what I put out there every day. At this point, obviously, it's a lot more. It's a lot more than just having a Facebook page to promote a book. You know what I mean? Or promote merchandise. It's Muskie's merchandise, and now eventually Stubby's merchandise. We have a ton of stuff. We have the book, the stuffed animal, the blanket, the coffee mug, the bathrobe. And obviously, I really would appreciate it if everybody buys one of everything. But it's a lot more than that. It's about bringing happiness to people and putting a smile on their face,
Right.
and making them laugh or making them reflect, whatever it is that they talk about. And I'm glad that I have the opportunity to do that.
And, I have to say, because I think we talked briefly before the show about this. I have the Saving Skeeter Facebook page, and
Yes.
I post every other day there, and I generally share a picture and just a brief few words about what Skeeter's up to, and I get a lot of positive feedback there. To me, it's sort of sharing the joy that Skeeter brings to me, where it can just be, he's running through one of the tubes with one of his siblings, and to the casual observer, that's a ferret running through a tube, but to Skeeter, and then to the rest of us, it can be an adventure. It's he's going into he's embarking on an adventure to discover or to investigate the unknown. What's at the other end of the tube? That sort of lightens things, and just that simple joy that you get from seeing animals explore their environment, interact with their people, their humans and their ferret siblings, and even the dogs and cats. It's kind of opens up a magical world, and of course we don't know what they're thinking, but we can see what they're doing, and they're not just doing things mechanically or methodically. They're having fun. You can
Yes.
see that when one of their siblings exits the tube, that they chase them. They're not just you're trying to investigate a smell or access someplace, to be a troublemaker. They get genuinely excited, about interacting with their environment and with their peers.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. And Musky, Stubby to a degree, because I adopted Stubby when he was Musky was so much older. Musky was already turning 6 when I adopted Stubby. They didn't play that often because Musky's older and she doesn't want to be bothered.
Sure.
But to watch them lay together, to watch them snuggle, just to watch them love one another was truly heartwarming for me.
Definitely. I can only imagine, every ferret is unique and every ferret relationship is unique. But what you described, I experienced something very similar. Again, with Skeeter, when I first got him, when I first came home, he was, not even a year old. And at the time, I had of course several other ferrets, but one of them was Ellie, who was about 8 years old, and she was still active, but she certainly was not as energetic and didn't have didn't play as much as Skeeter, and so they didn't really run in the same circles. They didn't play at the same times in the same places. But at the end of the evening, when everyone was worn out and playtime was over, you'd find them together in a hammock, snuggled up together.
Right, right.
So let's talk about Stubby. So, what made you decide to add another ferret to the family, and how did you go about meeting Stubby?
Well, so I'll tell you all about Stubby. And I was, everybody had said for ages, Muskie needs a friend. I need to get another ferret, yada, yada, yada. And, I was oftentimes against it, Paul, because well, Muskie doesn't need another friend. I'm Muskie's friend. That was my mindset.
Sure.
But if I get another ferret, Muskie's not going to want to play with me. Muskie's going to want to play with the other ferret, and I'll just be here. And on top of it too, Muskie was very standoffish when it came to other ferrets. She really didn't want to be involved with them. She had a ferret air of superiority. And like being on our own. Whenever a ferret would come into the shelter at the SPCA, one of the things that I did, because all the proceeds from the book I donate, short of getting a cool musky jacket or musky shoes or a blankie, in the grand scheme of things, Paul, this is chump change. It's not as if this is millions of dollars. Of course, if DreamWorks calls and they want to do the Muskie the Ferret movie, well, I'm keeping that money. You can count on that. But
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
otherwise, it's yeah, that would be the best. But otherwise, this it's money that I'm making because of what Muskie brought to my world. So why not give it all back? So whenever a ferret would come into the SPCA, Muskie would go down, visit that ferret. Tell that ferret how everything is going to be fine. I started out here and look at where I am today, so on and so forth. And one day, two ferrets came in on July, the evening of July 4th, 2020. Two stray ferrets came in from two separate locations. And Muskie went down to meet them. And one of those ferrets was Stubby. And in the past, so many other ferrets were really just, they couldn't leave Muskie alone, or they wouldn't leave Muskie alone. But Stubby was different. Stubby would go up to Muskie, say hello, and leave Muskie be. And I said, and he was absolutely beautiful, beautiful to look at. And I said, I think this might work. I really think that this might be the winning ferret. And I decided to take a chance and adopt Stubby, and I brought Stubby home. And it was quite honestly, Paul, the best decision that I ever made. He fit into this family beautifully. He is so wonderful. Now, Stubby's story, I'll share with you listeners, is much different, is similar to, but much different than Muskie's. Stubby is microchipped to Marshall Ferret Farms, which we found out when Stubby was under the care of the SPCA. Marshall's does not microchip their ferrets. The only times that Marshall's microchip ferrets is if those animals are scheduled to go to research. Now, how it is that Stubby ended up escaping from an animal research facility is anybody's guess. However, we're just very, and he was only 3.5 months old.
Oh, my.
So, because of that microchip, we were able to trace back exactly when Stubby was born and a couple of other things. How he got out of there in any way, shape, or form is anybody's guess. We have our own interpretation of it. And that is my name going to be out. It'll be en route. It was supposed to arrive actually on Monday the 14th, but now will not be arriving until Friday the 18th. My name is Muskie Stubby Story, and it's Stubby's story about escaping from the animal testing facility and coming to meet Muskie and become part of Muskie's world. So we're very excited about that story. It's something that, look, one of the most important things to me, whatever children's book I produce, it has to have meaning and it has to have purpose. And, you know, Muskie's story spoke about the importance of not to shop, but to adopt. And Stubby is going to be taking on the animal testing world. He's going to be taking on the world of animal research.
I talked about this briefly on a previous podcast episode, but I have not yet had one dedicated to this topic, and I do intend to have one. But in 2017, well, actually, let me back up. In 2013, I adopted two lab girls, two ferrets
Okay.
who were lab animals and were released. They had no names. They were not used to being handled, but they were two of the most loving little ladies. I named them Pixel and Pretzel, and they Pixel made it to about 8 years old. Pretzel only made it to about six. In 2017, I took on five more lab girls: Willow, Tara, Anya, Summer, and Twixel. And they were virtually identical. In fact, the seven of them were very similar. All seven were sable girls,
Right.
and these five were particularly identical. Two of them were virtually twins. I could even their nose patterns were the same. But even though they didn't have names, so I gave them all names. And after learning their personalities, I chose names for them. And a couple of them, weren't excited to be held. They wanted freedom. They would squirm out of your hands, and they would nip a little bit if you held them too long. But that very quickly melted away. Like, within 2 weeks, they were you could just see this the turnaround where they were enjoying life. They were enjoying playtime. They were enjoying their soupies. They were running and playing. They were most of them loved being held. They would curl up in my arms, fall asleep, or hold my hand. And it was a wonderful transformation to see, but it was also heartbreaking to think about where they were before they came here and what they had to go through.
Well, certainly. You know, Paul, animals being used in research is a big business, tremendous business. You know, worldwide, it's estimated there are over 192 million animals of all different species being used in research. Here in the United States alone, you know, animal testing costs taxpayers, you know, $14 to $15 billion annually. While there are 192 million throughout the world, you know, 22 million of them are here in the United States. You know, you're talking about a third of all experiments involve some kind of moderate to severe suffering. And the ironic part behind all of this is that 93 to 95% of all medicines that pass out of animal trials fail in human trials. So what is it that we're doing here really has to become the question that needs to be asked.
Right, or spending massive amounts of money putting innocent creatures through, you know, who knows what levels of pain and torture, and not getting, you know, much benefit out of it. And even if we were getting great benefit, that still, in my mind, doesn't justify that kind of treatment.
Oh, in my mind, it doesn't justify it either. But at least if we were say, if we could say we have developed the most essential life-saving medications as a result of animal testing, it would be a little bit easier for a lot of people to swallow and to accept. But that's not what's happening here.
Right.
It's a total way. I mean, and just if you look at it, if let's say you are not an animal lover and you just it really doesn't affect you or bother you, whatever happens to them. I mean, look, not everybody is on the same page as you and I. Okay, fine. I could accept that. Let's just look at it then from an economic perspective. And that is that I say to you very simply, Paul, give me $15 and I'm going to give you back $1.25. Now you would say, oh, I'm going to get back $16.25. No, Paul, I'm only going to give you back $1.25.
Right.
That's it. That's all you're getting back. And I'm going to do this with you every single year. You would sit back and you'd say, well,
Why am
why
I
would I
doing
make
this?
that investment?
Right.
This is a waste.
It's not
That's
really
what we're
even
facing.
an it's not really an investment. It's really kind of pouring money down the drain.
Pouring money down the drain, right? And that's exactly what we're doing. You might as well just throw it in the fireplace, and then when it's almost all burnt up, take $1.25 out. That's what you get back. It's shameful. I and look, we could have this conversation with a lot of the ways that government spends money and certain investments that they make. We could do this on a whole range of issues, but this is an issue obviously that's near and dear to my heart, to your heart, and to many others. And we've it's got to start to come to an end. Traditionally, as you know, as the chaplain of the Monmouth County SPCA, my political affiliations are I play it right down the middle. I'm Switzerland. That's what I tell everybody. I'm not a
Okay.
Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I play it right down the middle.
Sure.
My concerns, my ultimate concerns are the welfare and well-being of animals all throughout the state, all throughout the country, and all throughout the world. And so when it comes to making any type of political endorsements, which I don't make, but of course Stubby makes, Stubby endorses those who have a wonderful animal welfare record. That's my single voter issue. And I think that if people would like to see changes in this regard, they have got to let their elected representatives know that, you know, this is my single voter issue, animal welfare. And putting an end to animal testing is my single voter issue. Passing the FDA Modernization Act, which will eliminate animal testing as being a requirement and prior to any medication advancing in trials. That's something that we have got to focus on. If
Yes.
we don't, we're just going to continue to spin our wheels.
And I'd have to imagine that with all of the technology we have these days, that it would be possible that we would, you know, have models of how everyone's systems work detailed enough to be able to predict how some of the treatments in development would behave without actually using the physical creatures to test them.
Absolutely. And they're in defense of laboratories that do this type of research, there are some that are making those type of steps. I don't want to necessarily label each and every one of them as being terrible in that sense. There is continued work in order to try to reduce animals being used in any type of testing. However, unfortunately, it's not enough. If it were enough, we wouldn't need to have this. We wouldn't need to have this conversation.
Right.
This is the shame of it. And quite honestly, I really feel that if we don't address this, this is going to be one of the shames of our civilization in years to come.
So, what are some things that the average person can do to support improvements in these areas?
Well, listen, what can the average person do? The average person can contact their elected representative, write a letter to them, and ask that more money be put toward developing alternatives to animal testing. When you go shopping in your personal life, make sure to only try to buy cosmetics and household products and personal products that are certified cruelty-free. And continue to put pressure, inform everybody else of what these terrible statistics are. You know, like I said, as an animal cruelty officer, I learned the definition of ignorance is bliss. And a lot of people prefer to stay ignorant because if they knew the truth about a lot of issues, it would make them sick. And I'm not saying to let all the issues of the world totally consume you and prevent you from living a happy life. Sometimes we allow these things to take over, and we can't let that happen. But we do have to have an awareness. We do have to be aware of what's happening, and we have to work hard on trying to fix it. Look, you know, Frank Sinatra used to say with his song, "The House I Live In," he spoke about America as this big, beautiful, imperfect country. And we are a big, beautiful, wonderful, imperfect country. And he would say imperfect because if it were perfect, it wouldn't be any fun trying to fix it, trying to make it work better. And so that is the challenge of our times, continuing to move forward, trying to fix things that we do incorrectly and make things better for everyone. Including our animal brothers and sisters with whom we share this planet.
Yes, I completely agree. I don't want to go too far into this topic because I know this might not be at the top of anyone's list, but I'm vegan, and I have been vegan since 2016. I was vegetarian for about 6 years before that. And you mentioned ignorance is bliss. I've always been an animal lover. And when I learned where some of the foods I ate were coming from, it put me off. The food became less appetizing. And sure. When I discovered alternatives that that tasted just as good, but had no animal products in them. And in some cases, it tasted better and were better for me, better for my health. I was thrilled, and I will never go back because, you know, I think a lot of people think, well, I can't give up cheese. I can't give up meat. I can't give up this. I can't give up that. It tastes too good. But I don't miss any of those things because they have non-animal based alternatives that, again, taste just as good, in some cases better, and are better for you. And so I enjoy Hamburgers, I enjoy, pizza, I enjoy cheese on things, but none of it's made from any animals. And
Right.
I can't imagine going back now. So again, I realize that's not for everyone. It's a transition. You have to do, a fair amount of research. And it can things can certainly go wrong. You may not get enough of the right vitamins. You might get too much sodium, too much sugar. So you have to be careful. But I think that's another aspect of treating our animals better is looking at our food and looking at our
Well,
choices.
that's I am a 110% red-blooded meat eater. But at the same time, when I was a cruelty officer, I never did any cruelty cases and would not take a cruelty case at a slaughterhouse. The reason being is that I think that if everyone saw what goes on in these places, they would never eat meat again. And I know that if the apocalypse happened tomorrow and we were living in Thunderdome, and I had to go out and I had to hunt my own food, I'd last about 3, maybe 4 days. If I had to go out and I had to shoot that cute little squirrel that hangs out on my front porch that I give peanuts to, yeah, it would be over. Be over. 3, 4 days tops. Maybe 5 if I had a good amount of clean water. But that's it. It's because I've always said, look, I let Frank Perdue do all my dirty work. And it's something that we have to, the bottom line is that we need to treat our animals better in every aspect of their existence, whether they're used for food, whether they're used for testing, whatever it is that whatever it is that they're being bred for. They all have got to be treated with kindness, dignity, and respect. That's the one thing that I believe God demands of us, to care for his creation. When God gave us dominion over this planet as humans, that dominion is not meant to be domination. We're supposed to be good stewards of this planet, and we have to preserve it and we have to protect it. And if we fail to do so, I believe it'll be to our own peril.
I completely agree. So I'd like to, if we can, if you're comfortable with this, can you
Plus.
talk a little bit about Muskie's health and any conditions that she had when you first met her and how things kind
Sure.
of evolved as she aged and ultimately her loss several weeks ago.
Sure. When I first met Muskie at the Monmouth County SPCA, she was the absolute picture of perfect health. There was abs I mean, she was just absolutely beautiful and absolutely stunning. And I am a firm believer in maintaining an animal's health by bringing them to the vet for their annual checkups. And when I'm there, I never refuse the doctor when the doctor says, I think we should get blood work. I think we should do this. Absolutely. Whatever it takes in order to make sure that my animal is healthy. And if there's anything that we see that's going wrong, let's correct it now while we can. So, which is something that I never spoke about during Muskie's time as a social media star. Muskie was diagnosed with insulinoma, I'm going to say 2.5 years. I've had 2.5 years ago. Yeah. Muskie was diagnosed with the onset of insulinoma. The reason why it was only the onset of insulinoma is, like I said, I made sure when I brought Muskie to the vet, let's do what needs to be done. Let's check everything.
Right.
And Dr. McCleary, who was Muskie's doctor at Red Bank Veterinary Hospital, she is a wonderful exotics doctor, and I trust her implicitly with Muskie's care and now with Stubby's care. She said the reason Muskie was by far the best regulated ferret with insulinoma she has ever had in her practice.
Wow.
And the reason why is because A, we caught it early. very early. B, like clockwork, without fail, for 2.5 years at 5:30 in the morning and 5:30 at night, Muskie received her medicine.
That's very
Muskie
important.
would get her prednisone at, I mean, we had alarms set in the house. You know, Paul, sorry, got to go. I would be great hanging out with you, but it's time for Muskie to get her meds.
Yep.
Like it was, that's how serious it was. And it's not because Muskie was a social media star, it's because Muskie was my girl.
Yes.
Muskie was my ferret.
Yes.
Then what happened next? Muskie had developed a pimple on her neck. It was just a pimple. It's what it looked like. And the pimple started to grow and grew a little bit more. And it started to look like it started to take on the appearance of like, you know, like when you have a brain outside, you know, when you're holding a brain in your hand kind of thing. It had that brain membrane look
Okay.
to it. And of course, once the pimple first got there, I ran to the doctor. And the doctor said, okay, well, look, let's just watch it and let's just see what happens. And then about 5, 6 weeks later, I said, I've done enough watching. You ever watch a pimple? It's worse than watching water boil. You know, like when is this, what is this thing gonna do?
Right.
So I said, we've got to have this removed. And so the pimple was removed, and it turned out not to be a pimple. It turned out to be basal cell and squamous cell carcinoma. But once again, we had clean margins, and we caught it in time. Because whenever you're a pet parent, you got to be vigilant with these sort of things. If you're not, it's a recipe for disaster.
Yes.
And keep in mind, Muskie's attitude and Muskie's persona, nothing had changed. Everything was fine. They said, okay, you know, this is, you know, but nevertheless, you know, I felt it was best to take it off, and I'm glad that we did, because it invariably saved a life. Because that would have spread all over.
Right.
Of course, now came two issues. Number one, we have to, because if it was going to spread anywhere after that, it would be in the lymph nodes. So now, every 6 to 8 weeks, I would bring Muskie in A to check her glucose, make certain that her glucose levels were still on par and that we didn't need to do anything different with her medicines. And B, they would check her lymph nodes to see if there was any sign of lymph node enlargement that this cancer had spread. And of course, it didn't. But of course, ever vigilant, I still brought her in every 6 to 8 weeks.
Sure.
And of course, you know, I don't know if you've ever had a ferret, Paul, that has insulinoma. I would assume with the amount of ferrets you've had that you've definitely had at least one.
I sadly have had many. And I know that it's a relentless disease. It's heartbreaking when you keep increasing the prednisone to get the same effect, and it always wins. But it is, as you've described, it's critical that you stay on top of it and get their blood glucose checked regularly and make sure they're on the right dosages of medications, and keep them, comfortable for as long as possible. The strict regimen of, every 12
Muskie was
hours.
more than comfortable, you know. But hey, Paul, it's really a matter of catching it in time. You know, I think that a lot of people that have problems with their ferrets and their insulinoma is because it gets to a point where it's already got a foothold on the animal. You know what I mean? And so, like I said, with Muskie, you know, Muskie, and of course, Muskie took only chicken flavored prednisone from a compound pharmacy, you know, and so she even, you know, she looked forward to getting her medicine. And then she would wash it down with water. It was, you know, had a water chaser. And but you know, being persistent and being resilient, and staying on top of it is the key to these animals. But with insulinoma, as I was saying, the insulinoma was never the problem with her. What ended up becoming problematic after she had the tumor removed. Now we're going back every 6 to 8 weeks to check the glucose and check her lymph nodes.
Right.
The fur that was shaven off her neck, never grew back. Never grew back. And it just would not grow back, would not grow back. She had this naked patch of hair on her neck. Then, everybody has different opinions when it comes to implants on their ferrets for adrenal disease. I was now concerned. I have a ferret now that has insulinoma. I have a ferret now that just had cancer. In the spring, I said, I think I may want to do an implant. And Dr. McCleary said, okay, well, look, let's do a blood panel first. Let's do an abdominal ultrasound, which is fine. I also would like to see what's going on with her pancreas regarding the insulinoma. And I said, okay, sure. And the blood panel came back perfectly, and the abdominal ultrasound came back perfectly. And I said, you know what I'm going to do? I won't do the desflurane implant. I want to do that melatonin implant.
Okay.
Because I said, look, it's natural. That was my mindset. Why put a medication into an animal unnecessarily, right?
Well, yeah, and
The melatonin.
I've been advised by my vet that when they have insulinoma, depending on their blood glucose levels and how aggressive the insulinoma is, the desflurane implant can actually make things worse when combined, when the two are combined.
When the two are combined. Okay. All right. All right. That's the first I'm hearing. That's the first that I'm hearing that, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, in fact,
Nothing would surprise me.
I've had two that had insulinoma that once it got to a certain point, they were no longer candidates for their yearly desflurane implant, and we had to switch to monthly injections
Okay.
instead.
Well, I'll tell you this. I gave her the melatonin implant, and all of her fur fell out.
Oh my.
That's when Muskie lost her, really started to lose her fur.
Well, that's the opposite of what's supposed to happen. Usually a
The
melatonin
absolute
implant.
opposite of what's supposed to happen. Now, did I
Yeah.
get a bad implant? Did something go askew? I cannot say. But I gave her the melatonin implant, and it was a complete and total disaster.
Oy.
So now, Red Bank Veterinary Hospital, where Muskie goes, is one of the most advanced animal hospitals in the country. It's a teaching hospital. And they have over 90 veterinarians there of all different disciplines.
Wow.
So when I brought Muskie back saying, I now have this totally naked ferret, Dr. McCleary had no idea what the hell happened. And so she consulted with the dermatologist, she consulted with the acupuncturist, and they came to the conclusion that Muskie went into a state of telogen. From being poked and prodded and surgically having that tumor removed and yada yada, everything else under the sun now, her fur essentially collapsed. Her fur follicles collapsed,
Wow.
and she would most likely the her it would she would come out of a state of telogen, but there's no promises. And this little bit of fur that she has left may be the only fur that she keeps. And it looked like for the rest of her days, Muskie was wearing a cardigan, is what it looked like. That's the way that her fur settled in. No fur on her back end, no fur on her tail. And of course, at this point, I said, what the hell? I might as well give her the desflurane implant, see if that helps.
Right.
And that didn't help at all. Nothing. Nothing. So this is what ended up happening to, the most beautiful ferret I had ever seen in my life, with that beautiful white coat, the Elizabeth Taylor of ferrets, like I said. And even still, Muskie was still Muskie. She was still my best friend, and it didn't bother me. At first, it bothered me tremendously. I'm not going to lie to you, because you sit back and you say, oh my God, what's wrong with my ferret? Is my ferret going to die?
Well, yeah, you don't want them to be uncomfortable. You don't want them to be suffering or anything. And
Sure.
so yeah, that's got to be heartbreaking to watch.
I was more uncomfortable than Muskie was. And I tried to, she would get cold. You know what I mean? So, extra blankies kind of thing. Like, I'd notice her tail would get cold first. So I would literally put her tail in my hand, and as I'm holding her, hold her tail in my other hand so that this way it I help to keep it warm. Things like that. But I was it was heartbreaking at first, and I was so almost like embarrassed too. Did I do something wrong here? I mean, I know I did everything right, but what happened? And it almost goes back to like when Remy had gotten sick with cancer. Like, look, I do the right thing. What happened to you? And keep in mind at the same time, Paul, I've spent thousands of dollars at Red Bank Veterinary Hospital,
Terrific.
trying to make sure that Muskie has the most optimum level of care. I mean, there's got to be a picture of Muskie up there in the exotics department, and underneath the caption reads our sponsor. Because of all the money that we've spent there. Not to mention the fact that through the Muskie Foundation that I started, Muskie paid for surgeries for three ferrets that otherwise, or didn't pay for completely, but contributed to covering the cost of for three ferrets who otherwise would not have their families would not have been able to afford the life-saving surgery these animals needed. And so, you spend all this money, you do the right thing, and you feel like you get the short end of the stick.
Yes, I understand, and I sympathize. That feels very defeating.
Yes.
One would hope that with all the modern medicine and technology we have, that we'd have treatments for any condition, especially in these animals. Again, as we talked about earlier, since they're used in testing, like, what? How do we not know how to fix all of these issues?
Sure.
And when you put the time in, the money in, and most importantly your heart, to
Yes.
not get the not be able to help, to not be able to turn things around, it's heartbreaking.
Certainly, certainly, certainly. I mean, even when Muskie had her last, oh, so moving fast forwarding again, Muskie then developed a year later, practically a year to the day. Muskie had developed another tumor on her face,
Oh no.
another wait and watch type of thing, and I looked at it and I said, you know what? I don't have the time and patience to wait and watch. She had cancer once before. Luckily, we beat it. For all I know, this is a recurrence. Let's get it off. And so we got it off, and thankfully, it was only a sweat gland tumor. So I said, "Oh, okay." I said, "Okay, this is good. Thank goodness. We don't have to worry about cancer again, at least now." And that was in December of last year. And Stubby took wonderful care of Muskie when she came home from the hospital. And it's and of course what did Stubby say when Muskie came home? She started barking orders at me and everybody else, so I knew she was going to be fine. She was back to terrorizing everyone, so I knew Muskie was going to be just fine. And that was the persona that I gave to Muskie on her social media. She was the boss. And it was so, listen, losing her was probably the hard, one of the hardest things I've ever had to go through. And yet at the same time, I'm glad that I had the opportunity to go through it. When I counsel people about losing their animals, I tell them they come to me and they're hurting and they're suffering. And I tell them, I say, look, I could take all of this hurt and pain away in 2 seconds if you let me. And they say, oh, of course, tell me how. And I say, for you to have never had Fluffy in your life at all.
Yeah,
They say, well,
no.
I don't want that. I love Fluffy. I had Fluffy for 15 wonderful years. Fluffy was my best friend. I said, well, Can't we sit back and reflect on those 15 wonderful years that you spent with Fluffy instead of these last terrible 15 days? Can we focus on the dash? We have a born date, we had a die date, but let's focus on the dash. And I look at Muskie and I say to myself, look at everything that Muskie provided to the ferret world around her. Not only did she really write the first successful children, ferret children's book, and became a Woozle entrepreneur, she really had outreach to her species. We were able to save ferrets that otherwise would not have been savable. We brought attention to an animal that otherwise would have continued to have been a forgotten animal by so many. We've done a wonderful, wonderful job, and Stubby is picking up that ferret mantle and is carrying it forward. I mean, look, Muskie was the first ferret to ever be honored by a government entity in April for National Ferret Day. The state of New Jersey, the Senate passed a resolution making April 2nd in throughout the state Muskie the Ferret Day.
That is awesome.
I mean, how many other ferrets can make that claim?
I think at this point, zero.
Zero. That's right. That's right. I mean, Muskie has met with politicians. Muskie created an agenda. Once again, not taking into account my personal politics, but my professional politics as Muskie's parent. Muskie only endorsed politicians who had an animal-friendly record, and Muskie would meet with them, and Muskie would say, "Hey, this is what's going on here in this world. This is what needs to be changed. This is what my species is enduring. This is what so many other animals are enduring, and we've got to change that." And it's nice to have been able to see positive results of that. Politicians in many ways are great. It doesn't matter whether they're a Democrat or a Republican or an independent. No politician wants to be seen as the guy who hates animals.
Yes.
All politicians kiss babies. All politicians love a cuddly pet beside them. If they didn't, they would look like schmucks. And so, if I'm bringing Muskie there, this is an opportunity, Senator, Congressman, for you to shine with a vast constituency. Take advantage of it. You know what I mean? And let's see whether or not we could work together and make a difference. And usually, a lot of them, definitely would like want to do something like that.
And I was going to ask, what would you say is Muskie's legacy? But I think you just answered that. Just bringing awareness about ferrets and even reminding us that our shared love of animals can be something that unifies us.
That's no question about it. No question about it.
I think
Every
that's
year I have my Blessing of the Animals event at the SPCA, and it is billed as an all faiths blessing of the animals. And I do it that way on purpose because, Paul, you're Jewish, I'm Catholic, your neighbor is Protestant, the guy down the block is Muslim. Yet the one thing that we all have in common is our love and dedication to our companion animals. Let's see if we can take that, come together, and learn about each other, build bridges between our different communities instead of erecting walls. That's how I see it.
I think that is a wonderful message for everyone to take to heart. So Muskie's final days, I can only imagine, for you how difficult they must have been. Those of us following her on social media, knew that she was not well and were were pulling for her, and when we got word that that she had passed, you know, I think it's safe to say, you know, collectively our hearts all broke. I want to thank you for sharing her with us, even, you know, up to the funeral. So I know that you recorded that, and I believe it's on YouTube.
Yes, it is. Yes.
And I will freely admit, like, I cried as I watched that. I know the pain of losing a ferret, many ferrets, and you know, when you've got someone like Muskie who you've got such a special bond with, but many people across the world have a special bond with. Obviously not in the same way, because we're not all there. We can't hold her. You know, experience her presence in person, but just, you know, learning her personality and her antics from across the world. You know, I think, you know, again, our hearts all broke. I want to thank you for sharing her, and for allowing us to participate in her service.
Well, it was, you know, at first I wasn't going to record the service. I said, you know, that's tacky. You know what I mean? Like I said, it's just, you know, that's tacky. Of course, I invited anybody who wanted to come. Everybody was more than welcome to come. And I had people come to the funeral from as far away as Chicago. They flew in to attend Muskie's funeral, which I was so touched by that. And I said, you know, I can't record this. It was supposed to be a Facebook Live event, but unfortunately the internet in a crematorium is not exactly the best. You know, sure. A building surrounded by concrete and metal doesn't quite broadcast well.
Right.
Which is something I didn't realize at the time. So the decision was made instead to record it. And I said, you know, even still from the beginning, when it came to broadcasting it or recording it, I said, no, this is tacky. You know, I said, I can't, you know, I don't want anybody to think I'm trying to capitalize off of Muskie's passing. And my wife said to me, you know, who has thankfully been such a wonderful voice of reason for me for so many years. She said, look, it's not, you're not being tacky. You're not trying to capitalize off it. But the truth is that Muskie meant an awful lot to so many people in so many different places. And obviously, you know, look, a lot of people can't be there, understandably. But this way they have the ability to feel as if they were a part of it.
Yes.
And I reflected on it for a while, and I said, you know, they broadcasted Muhammad Ali's service. They broadcasted Queen Elizabeth's service. You know what? Yeah. I'm going to do that then. I'm going to do that so that this way people all over the world who felt connected to Muskie can be part of the service as well. And you know, people have said to me, it was once again one of the hardest things that I've ever had to do. But if anybody was going to do it, Paul, it was going to be me. It's my ferret. This is what I do as the chaplain. I'm the one who's going to do Muskie's service. And somebody had said to me, I can't believe you were able to do that. And, you know, guess what? You know, I did my mother's service. When my mother was sick, my mother had died a year ago. August is a year. My mother had pancreatic cancer. And about 2 weeks before she had passed, her and I had the conversation. You know, Mom, what do you want to do here, Mom? In terms of, you know, a service, you know, who do you want to do your service? And she said, well, I figured you would do it. And I said, oh, that's just great. Thanks. You know, because handling everything regarding your passing isn't enough pressure.
Sure.
Now I got to do your funeral service too. Thanks, Ma. You know, and of course that was my mother's request, and I obliged her, but you know, it was terrible. Was very, very hard to write, very, very hard to put together for me. And the same thing when it came to Muskie's. Muskie meant the Muskie meant so much to me, and I'm so glad that I was the one thing that got me through her passing because of the close relationship that Muskie and I had was the support of all of you, Paul. I got to be honest with you, if it weren't for Muskie's fans, the Musketeers, if it wasn't for her fans sending their condolences to me, I don't think I would have been able to. I don't think I would have handled her passing as gracefully as I was able to. News of Muskie's passing, Paul, was shared over 300 times on Facebook. The post received 2,500 plus 2,700 plus engagements, and had over 1,200 comments.
It's amazing, such a small creature with such a big impact.
Right. And Paul, this really is not what I was expecting at all when I first started this. I said, look, I'm going to write a children's book, and hopefully everybody will like it, and that's going to be the end of it, and I'm going to go away, and I'm going to say I was able to write a book. Look at me, just another thing to put on my epitaph when that time comes.
Sure.
But it became so much more, and I'm so glad it took me to the place that it's taken me to.
So, what's next for Muskie's family? So we've got Stubby.
Stubby is the HFIC now, the head ferret in charge. Look, we all know the frailties of these animals. I knew that
Yes.
Muskie's day would come. I didn't expect it to be October 16th. I didn't expect it. You know what I mean? It's you never expect it, and it's never a good time.
Right.
Well, I really hope that, if my animal dies, it's in February. I really have an open schedule then. Life doesn't work that way,
If it did, I would say, how about you never die?
How about right? How about you never die? How about we never meet that? And how about we never go down that inevitable path?
Yes.
But so we all knew that, this was going to come sooner rather than later. We all get to a point in our lives when we have more time in the rearview mirror than we do looking out the windshield.
And especially with ferrets, we know that for the most part, we're going to outlive our ferrets, by many, many years.
We know we are going to outlive, as a general rule, Paul, every pet that comes into our lives.
Yes.
And I say this to people all the time. I would much rather say goodbye to Muskie and Stubby and all my other animals here in the house, Sativa the cat, Gubbio the dog. I would much rather say goodbye to them than have them say goodbye to me.
Yes.
And I'm going to explain what I mean by that. If something happened to me, especially now while Muskie was older, I would worry myself sick on my deathbed. Who is going to take care of Stubby? Who is going to give Stubby what Stubby needs? Stubby likes to eat this, Stubby likes to play with that. Who is going to do that? If I'm not here, Stubby's not going to have a happy life anymore. That would be my biggest worry on my deathbed. And
I completely understand.
I would much rather say goodbye to them. I would much rather hold them in my hands and let them know it's going to be okay. Because remember, Paul, you're the best ferret parent in the world. No one could do what you do. I'm the best ferret parent in the world. Nobody could do what I do. And I would worry myself sick. I wouldn't be able to go. I wouldn't be able to transition. I wouldn't be able to pass on because I'd worry about them too much. My soul would be tormented.
Yes, I'm right there with you. And certainly, to your point earlier, so we know we're going to outlive them, but I would rather say goodbye than to never have said hello. in the first place, because life would never
That's
have been the
right.
same without them.
That's right. I will take all the hurt and pain and grief that I'm experiencing and we're all experiencing over Muskie's passing than to never have had Muskie in my life at all.
Yes. Yeah, there have been times where the heartbreak of losing a ferret has been so great. I've thought I can never do this again. And then I stop and I think, and I'm like, well, I wouldn't trade my memories with the one who passed for anything. And there's somebody else out there who needs a loving home, who needs, you know, a belly full of warm soupies and blankets and friends to play with. And I can provide that. And what they give me in return is
tenfold.
Immeasurable. Yes.
That's right.
Tenfold. And so is it going to hurt when they pass? Yes, absolutely. Is it worth it? Absolutely.
Absolutely. I would gladly do this all again. If I was able to hit the rewind button, I would do this all again without question.
Even knowing the outcome, yes.
Even knowing the outcome.
Yes.
Because, Paul, it's, you know, this is the outcome for all of us, Paul.
Right.
Yeah, I hate to be the bearer of bad news.
None of us is getting out of here alive.
None of us are getting out of here alive. That's right. Yes. That's right.
Does Stubby like being an only ferret, or do we maybe see a new sibling for him in the future?
I think it would be in Stubby's best interest to have a friend.
Okay.
You know, it's funny because we actually had visitors last week who had ferrets, and we went down into the ferret playroom and they ran and they chased and they chased and they ran. And, you know, and here it is. I'm trying to now play with Stubby a little bit too. Look, Stubby, look, here's your snake. Look, Stubby, here's your ball. And Stubby wanted nothing to do with me. Stubby was way too busy playing with the other ferrets. And I said back, you know, and I almost felt I was jealous because, you know, Stubby, what about your dad? You know,
yes,
this is
yes.
What I'm saying to myself. But Stubby is young. Stubby really, really likes other ferrets. Stubby will, I think, benefit from having a friend. I would really like to get Stubby. Obviously, look, when I adopted Muskie, Muskie was 3 years old. I would much rather get a younger ferret. So I want Stubby to be able to mold that ferret and train that ferret the way that Muskie did to him. And see where the story continues to take us, Paul.
Yes.
See where the story continues. You know, I don't have any plans for this. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yep.
It's not like I say, all right, well, here's when we're going to do this. And here's when this is all off the cuff, so to speak. You know, I said this too a long time ago, you know, when I look back on the success of this, you know, Paul, in all honesty, imagine if I knew what the hell I was doing. Think of how big this could be. You know, I've been shooting from the hip this entire time, and apparently I'm hitting the target because everybody still seems to love it, and it continues to grow.
Well, yes, and I think people see that it's, you know, this is not a planned thing. This is not a, how do we capitalize on this? This is not a planned enterprise. It's sort of happening organically. And I think that's, you know, the best way to just let it happen.
The ups and downs, the ins, the outs, the trials and the tribulations.
Yes. So for those who might want to buy Muskie's book or Stubby's forthcoming book, or blanket or any of the other merchandise.
Blanket or the coffee mug or the shoes. Right. There's a plethora of merchandising.
Where can they go and what do they do?
Go right to the website, which is www.mynameismuskie.com. That's M-U-S-K-Y. Once again, www.mynameismuskie.com.
Excellent. Okay. Well, we certainly appreciate your time today. And again, thank you for all you've done, not just for Muskie, but for animals in general. Again, earlier we talked briefly about my ferret Kyra, who benefited from the immunotherapy.
Yes.
And there are many other animals out there that are benefiting from some of those new techniques. And certainly, I think everyone's hearts are a little more full having known Muskie, whether in person or virtually. We look forward to Stubby's adventures. Maybe Stubby will in the literary world encounter his distant cousin Skeeter. Who knows?
That would be wonderful. That would be absolutely wonderful. And I really hope that I continue to be able to make an impact here. My
I
hope is that
definitely.
Muskie's book made an impact and spoke about adoption. Stubby's book is going to make an impact regarding animal testing. I even put in a moral dilemma in the book for animal shelters and animal rescues. And I'd like to see how many people are able to find it and identify it, because it was actually a big issue when it came to getting somebody to write the byline for the book, believe it or not. And it's something that, the animal welfare community has got to figure out and decide as well. So it really has a couple of twists in there that I think you and all of ferret fans all over the world are definitely going to enjoy.
That's
Animal fans, forget ferret fans. Animal fans are going to really enjoy.
excellent. Well, we certainly look forward to it. And Maddie, thank you again for spending time with us and talking about
Oh,
Muskie and
Paul, it was
Stubby
my
and
pleasure. I look forward to it, and it'll be my pleasure to come back anytime. Don't hesitate to ask.
Oh, excellent. Maybe we'll have some more conversations about maybe Skeeter paying a visit.
That sounds great.
If you'd like to share a story about a special pet, visit us at talkintalespodcast.com or reach out to us on Twitter at talkintales. That's TalkinTales, or on Facebook at facebook.com/talkintales. If you'd like to support the show, you can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/talkintales. No matter what podcast app you choose, please take a moment to rate and review the show. It helps us find new listeners, which means we can bring you more stories.